Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everybody, welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. Welcome back to the show. Happy to be here today with my guest, a new brewery on the scene, which I don't normally do on the show, but this brewery has impressed me so much through trying their beer that I made an exception to my normal rule that you have to have been around for a little while before you come on the show. I've got Tenma Beer Project on the show with me today. Brennan Perry, the co-owner and head brewer, is here. Welcome to the studio, Brennan.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going well, man. I'm really glad you made it out here. Traffic be damned.
Yeah.
All the way from Oakland, you made it out.
So I did.
Thank you for that. Before we go on, thanks to our sponsor of this show and every show we do, More Beer, my good friends over at More Beer. Go to morebeer.com and check them out, and check out their YouTube channel, too. And in fact, I did a collaboration beer with them just yesterday at Oak Park Brewing up in Sacramento. You ever been there, Brennan?
I have not.
So, great guys, great place, super cool location, the Oak Park neighborhood of Sacramento. It's just one of my new favorite places. It's super cool. But we went up and we brewed a double IPA that we're going to enter into the bistro, which you ridiculously won last year in your first year of being a brewer.
I did.
Is that right?
Yeah.
With a double IPA?
No, it was the single IPA.
It was the single IPA. Yeah. Okay, okay. But, well, we're going to try our hand at the double IPA just for fun. We're brewing it anyway. We brewed a double IPA. We're calling it Hoppenheimer. So we're hoping it's nice. Like the world's biggest
the
hop
old,
bomb.
The old know? Hop pun.
Yeah, you got to have a hop pun, right? And I'm hoping we're like the first ones to think of Hoppenheimer. We'll see. But anyhow, did that with More Beer and Oak Park Brewing. Super stoked about that. Thanks to the More Beer guys for supporting that brew with Victory Malt, which tasted fantastic. And I can't wait to try the finished beer. All right. And then just a quick announcement. Spring Brews Festival is upon us. Saturday, March 30th is when it's going to be, from noon to 4. Tickets are on sale now. You can go to thebrewingnetwork.com, buy your tickets now. It will sell out. It's been selling out, and it will sell out. So go to thebrewingnetwork.com, get your tickets. They're just $65. And then there's some stupid fees that Eventbrite wants to charge you. Not my problem, not my fault. I apologize for that, but it just is what it is. $65. It's about the cheapest beer fest still around. Like, I can't go to a beer fest anymore for less than $150. But not mine. $65. Grab your friends, get your tickets. And Tenma will be there.
We will, yeah. Yes.
So if you haven't had their beer yet or by then, you can try Tenma, along with 59 of our other brewery friends will be there. So get your tickets now and come hang out with us. All right, well, let's get to it. So Brennan, you opened Tenma when?
So we opened our doors to the public, I believe it was April 12th of last year.
Of
23. Yes. Of 23. 2024 now, yeah. So we actually took the keys in basically mid-December of 22.
Okay.
Had to kind of revamp the place and get it running to basically my specifications.
Sure. It was a brewery before.
Yes, it was. It was previously Novel Brewing Company.
That's right.
They had been around for about 6.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, husband and wife running that, just kind of like what we're doing now. It's my wife, Dana, and myself.
Okay.
But yeah, so we had to kind of take that facility and clean it up, get it to where I wanted it to be, and then it was off to the races.
You purchased the space with a brewery in it, though, with the brewing equipment and all that?
Yeah. So okay. I didn't really change a whole lot.
Okay.
We kind of just put our decorations on it. We made it look the way we wanted it to and whatnot.
Okay.
I moved some tanks around. The biggest thing was like I had to actually rebuild the entire glycol header.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the one that was there just was a little tired.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Got it.
So I rebuilt the entire glycol header.
Okay.
All the drops and everything, and then got the glycol chiller running. So we had initially planned to be open for SF Beer Week last year.
Okay.
But yeah, that didn't happen.
Mostly because of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, still, I mean, an investment in that and time-wise, to get into a brewery and open and serving beer, you kind of did that in record time. So one little hiccup's not too bad.
Yeah, no. I mean, all considered, you know, we had, this has been a project that we've been wanting to do for the last, I don't know, probably 4 years or so.
Yeah, okay.
At least, like, seriously. And so we had looked at building something up from the ground up, you know, and if you're doing that, it's year and a half at least, you know.
Yeah, and a couple million dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays,
yeah, at least.
You know?
at least.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah, that was basically, like, the numbers. It's, like, in the millions. And it was like, yeah, I don't have that. Mm-hmm. So we definitely wanted to try and find something that we could just buy and just turn it on and keep it going.
So were you looking elsewhere, too, or did you want to be in Oakland?
So we actually were looking at a bunch of places in Orange County.
Okay.
So I grew up in this area. I started my brewing career here and then followed work. Ended up down in Escondido.
Okay.
And then up in Huntington Beach, the kind of Orange County area, and stayed there for work. There's a lot of places to work. So it was like, well, might as well stay here. And so we'd kind of established ourselves.
I'm going to make some guesses.
Yeah.
There's too many up here for me to guess. But Escondido... You must have worked at Stone.
I did.
Okay. All right. I'm one for one.
Yeah.
Huntington Beach. Beechwood.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Two for two. Fuck, should I try to guess up here? Up here is just going to be random. Where did you live up here?
So I lived in San Ramon.
Oh. Well, you didn't brew in San Ramon.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blanket. Who's out there? Who was it?
They don't exist anymore.
Oh, okay. Who was it?
Shoe Bros. Yeah.
Oh, I think I only knew them for 1 year at Spring Brews, I think. Yeah. And then they were...
I think that I never heard from them again.
Oh, okay. For them. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay. Where else have you brewed? Anywhere?
So, yeah. So, I started off Shoe Bros. Yeah. I was there for about like 2.5 years. Honestly, it was just... Prior to that, I was homebrewing.
Okay.
So, it was basically like the first step in where it's just like, what the hell is keg cleaning? Like, cleaning a tank? Oh, my God. So, it was definitely the first kind of foray into the industry.
Okay.
Helped me understand, you know, what brewing practices were and things like that.
Yeah. But lager brewing right away, too, right?
That was all contracted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, that kind of just got my feet wet. And then from then I went off to Escondido to go work for Stone.
Okay.
Stone was one of those places that was always like, oh my God.
Of course.
It's like one of the heroes for me. And especially at the time, I went down there in 2015.
Okay.
So Mitch Steele was still around.
That's what I was going to ask.
Like,
that's great.
All that stuff was happening. They hadn't built Richmond yet. They were in the process of building Berlin.
Okay.
And so they were still kind of like in there like, you know, oh my God, it's Stone.
Yeah.
I quickly learned, though, that I did not like running a large production, like working in a large production atmosphere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just too, like, kind of industrial feeling for
I had no idea. So I went from a place that was really small and, like, I knew exactly what was in every tank. I knew if I had done something to it or not. And then I went to Stone, and it was like, to put it in perspective, when I was there, they had 69 360 barrel fermenters.
Oh my gosh.
And two five vessel 120 brew houses. Wow, so it was like,
I don't know what's happening.
Of course, you're like,
no, that's a factory.
You're dry hopping a beer and you're like, I have no idea if I'm ever even going to taste this.
Right.
Or what's going to happen. So, I definitely kind of got disconnected from the product, and that was not fun.
Still probably some good lessons to learn, especially from Mitch Steele. I mean, great brewer, but even though that's kind of not your thing in size, maybe just dealing with those volumes was helpful in learning.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So going from a place that was, you know, just basically like a pub size small thing, it was a 7-barrel then, going off to this big production facility, like, it changed my mindset on beer completely.
Okay.
I went from seeing it as just like, I don't know, you could just make it happen, to being like, oh, there's SOPs, you have to do it this way.
Right.
Why? You know, and I could ask the question why, and there'd be like somebody telling me exactly why they do it the way they do.
Nice.
So it really taught me, like, I don't know, I guess consistency, mm-hmm. and like reasons for doing things. They had a lab, they had, you know, all cell counting and all these things, and I understood that, like, wow, some of this stuff is really important.
Yeah.
And like, if you're not paying attention, you know, you could skip a lot of this stuff, and that may be why some things don't taste the way they should.
Yeah. In fact, I think that you find, I don't know, I don't want to say more often than not, but there's a lot of small brewers out there that don't have SOPs and don't go, you know, brewing is an art, right? So that's cool. But when you leave out the science, you leave some things behind.
Definitely. Right? So. I would consider myself more of a technical brewer than an artistic brewer.
Okay.
I kind of rely on the technical aspects to get me where I want to go. And the art is kind of like by feel on the, just as it's going on.
Yeah. Okay. So where'd you go from there then?
So from there, I quickly decided, I basically lasted, I think, 11 months at Stone.
Okay.
You know, there's working overnights and all that stuff is crazy.
Yeah.
So I decided I wanted to go back to somewhere a little bit smaller. So at the time, Beechwood, was a brew pub in Long Beach.
Yep.
And they had not opened a production facility yet.
Okay.
So Julian Trigo.
Yeah.
He had put up a posting for like a production brewer.
Yeah.
And it was when they had opened their Huntington Beach facility. So this was kind of like their step into the production world. This is going to be the step into like distribution, you know, way more.
Sure, yeah.
So, I basically applied for the job and kept poking him until, you know.
Did you know him before
I
that?
I did not. Yeah. No, okay. I honestly didn't even know Beechwood. I did a little bit because at Stone they would have guest taps and like all the brewers were like, dude, there's a Beechwood beer. Like, you got to go get it.
Yeah.
You know, because like the IPAs coming out of there were absolutely mind-blowing.
Right.
So I had tried some of the stuff and I decided basically like I wanted to apply for it. Well, I guess there is a pretty important side part to this story.
Okay.
So while I was working at Stone, I actually had met my now wife.
Oh, she was working there too? Or?
No, okay. She was living in Orange County.
I see.
Okay. So I was making the trip basically like every weekend to go see her. And I was like, man, I'm done with this Stone thing. Like, I want to move on. And it just so happened that Beechwood is opening a production facility in Huntington Beach.
Got it.
Okay. So I was like, well, now I can be closer to my girlfriend. I can work at this great place.
Yeah.
And so I like kept poking Jules and being like, hey, I really want this job.
Okay. Yeah. And he finally gave it to you.
Yep.
Now, so Jules is a friend of mine and a great brewer. But let me ask you this. I don't know if you're going to be honest or not. I haven't decided if it would be cool to work for Julian or not. I kind of feel like he'd be a dick to work for.
Okay.
And here's why. Because he's a stickler. Like, he's a fun person. I have a great time with him because we're like hanging out outside of work. But I feel like he's a stickler in the brew house.
You are correct. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
He is a very stern, very strong personality.
Yeah.
But I guess why I worked so well with him is because everything he did was based on like technical reasons.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if I could provide a reason for doing something, he'd be open to it.
Nice.
That being said, there's a lot of people that I'm like, oh, I worked for Julian. And they're like, how did you do that?
Okay. Yeah.
I thought that. I love the guy, but I can understand that some people don't get him.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a lovely human being. We've always had a great relationship.
Oh, yeah.
But like I said, I also just know his personality. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I could work for him, though.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I'll say that for a lot
I will say that I did work for him twice.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. So you have a walkout day or what?
No. I was working as a production brewer at the Huntington facility. And I had another friend who worked at Taps in Brea at the time.
Okay.
Brea and Corona. And they were opening up a new production facility. And they said, hey, you want to run this thing? And it was like, oh, yeah. Like, it's a brand new 30-barrel, like, there's like a $6 million facility.
Wow.
And
okay.
Like, just, you want the full range.
Here's
of
the
it?
Keys.
Yeah. And it was like, well, how do I say no to that?
Yeah.
You know, okay. And they were, and Taps, and if for those who don't know, Taps was an amazing, like, lager brewery.
Okay.
They had won, oh my God, I think I counted at one point, it was like 30 or 40, like, World Beer Cup and GABF medals.
Wow.
And a significant portion of those were lagers.
Okay.
So it was like, oh, cool, I can work with my friends, I can learn how to brew great lager, and I get to run my own facility.
That's pretty cool.
It was hard to say no.
Yeah. 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 So Julian must have understood if he let you back afterward.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So... I was at Beechwood for about 2 years.
Okay.
And then I went to Taps, and I was there for about 3 years. And at the end of that, Taps doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So at the end of that whole situation, kind of got weird. The ownership basically didn't really want to run a brewery anymore.
I see.
So they bought Mason Ale Works.
Okay.
And then Mason Ale Works was given the keys to kind of run everything.
Mm-hmm.
So like overnight, I went from running the entire beer program to having to brew Mason beers and not having creative control.
I see.
So, and I don't really want to get too much into it, but it kind of got weird, and I was just like, you know what, I'm out.
Not your jam.
So I ended up calling Julian, and I said, hey, I'm going to be applying for some jobs. Do you mind if I use you as a reference?
Hmm.
And he said, give me a half hour.
Oh.
And then he calls me back. He's like, how about I give you a job instead?
Nice.
And I was like, all right, yeah.
Well, easy. That's great. I wonder if he went and fired someone in that 30 minutes.
No.
Okay. So you had a lot of, this is now starting to make sense,
yeah,
about why, how you kind of hit the ground running with good beer. And then before I get into that, but you did say you were looking all over, but did you just not find anything down south that was as good of as what you found here in Oakland?
So we actually did find something we wanted.
Okay.
We ended up putting an offer on it, and it just didn't work out.
I see.
Just the dealing with everything of trying to make a business deal work.
Yeah.
There's so much to it.
Oh, yeah.
And the stars have to kind of align a little bit. So we had actually put in an offer. We were working towards this thing, and it fell through. So I had actually just been, funnily enough, I actually found all these breweries for sale by literally typing in Google California brewery for sale.
Really?
Yeah. So
it just popped up.
There was like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of like, you know, it said this area, you know, brewery for sale, this area brewery for sale. And I just kept signing NDAs and okay, seeing what they were.
Yeah.
And so we'd actually looked at this one in Oakland at the same time as the other one that we put the offer in.
I see.
And so once it fell through, I hit them up and said, hey, is this still off on the table?
Yeah.
And they said, yeah.
Okay.
So, and then it basically started, let's see. We walked into that facility July 4th. 2022.
Okay.
And we took the keys, I think, December 18th, 2022.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Took a little time, but
yeah. Oh yeah.
But then ready to go. And just out of curiosity, did you buy the whole building, or you leased in the building, just bought what's inside?
We bought the assets.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
That's the legal terminology.
Got it. Bought the assets and signed a lease.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, and we can use the beer that's in our glass to start talking about it. So I had heard that you opened, and I hadn't tried your beer. And I had heard about it because I knew of Novel. And in fact, for a minute there, I was going to try to get them on the show because they'd been around for years and I never put them on the show. And they weren't answering me. And now I know why.
Yeah.
You know, they had closed. And then you go in there, I go, all right, you know, well, that's cool. And then I think the next thing I see before I ever try your beer, you win the bistro. And I'm like, well, this is, now you're pulling a Win Weisenhunt over here. I think he did the same thing. And I'm just like, well, that's just crazy. Maybe it's a one-off, right? Because no one's that good when they just open a brewery. And then my buyer here starts buying your beer. And I'm telling you, Brendan, I haven't had a bad beer from you. And I don't say that to everybody. I'll tell people that their beer's great, and there's still a few that aren't that good. everything I've had from you is so delicious. So I really think you hit the ground running. And now that I know your pedigree, it kind of makes sense too.
Well, thank you. Yeah. First off.
Really been enjoying
it. I mean, I definitely am kind of a stickler for just being, you know, I'm not afraid to like dump a batch if it doesn't taste good to me.
Okay. Yeah.
So like if, you know, things aren't working right, like I try really hard to make things taste the way that I want them to.
Sure. And look, that should go without saying, but unfortunately it doesn't. I mean, there's so many breweries out there and there's not a lot of bad beer out there. I'm not saying that. Beer's gotten just so much better. But there's a lot of unremarkable beer.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'll finish the pint and that's fine. Now I'm moving on.
Right.
I don't have anything bad to say about it, but I don't really have anything good to say about it either.
Yeah.
And if that were my brewery, I would consider that a failure, especially in today's market. Like, yes. I don't know how anybody, they do, but I don't know how they make it with unremarkable beer. But every beer I've had from you, I've got plenty to say about it. It's, you know, it's just delicious. And it just surprises me that there's not more like it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I think that, like, it's so easy to find, like, mediocre beer or, you know, good beer, but it's really hard to find things that, like, really wow me.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly always on the hunt for something that, like, can really blow my socks off and,
right,
you know, teach me a thing or two. Because that's really what I do is, like, I learn from everybody else. I listen to podcasts and...
Right.
What are people doing? Oh, let me try that.
As you should.
Yeah.
You know. I'm kind of the same. While I'm always on the lookout for a new brewery that's good, I still end up with about 6 or 7 in my rotation because I know it doesn't... Now 8, to be honest with you. because I know that it doesn't matter which beer I grab, I'm going to enjoy it. All I have to do is pick which style I feel like drinking.
Right.
And then, you know, it's going to be from Altamont, Ghost Town, Original Pattern, Tenma, Russian River's in there. You know, there's some more I'm forgetting. Forgive me out there. Beechwood would be one. I'll buy anything from Beechwood and know that it's going to be delicious. You know, so I don't know how breweries don't end up, you know, wanting to strive for that. I do think, though, I'm curious your opinion on this. Some of us, we just have blinders. Like, in other words, I don't think that all of those brewers are either lazy or like just going, well, I'm just going to put that out even though it's mediocre. I do feel like a lot of us can't. We don't know what we're good at or not good at. We don't always taste our own product. We don't, you know. I know musicians out there that are terrible too, and I don't know how that's worked out for them, right? So sometimes we have blinders, right?
Yeah.
Like, what did you do to be able to self-evaluate your beer?
I mean, I'll say that I'm my own worst critic.
Okay.
So I'm not afraid to say when something's not good.
Yeah.
And even so, like, even all the stuff that I'm putting out currently, like, I'm always tasting it and going, what can I do to make this better?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm never satisfied. Like, my wife will say that all the time. She's like, you just, why don't you like this? Like, it's great. I'm like, no, it's not perfect.
You're Bistro IPA and you're like, I don't know. It's all right.
I honestly, even so, like I could go back to that brew log and I'm sure I could find a whole bunch of notes of like, what should I change?
Right.
What's different? Why didn't this work? Or like, how could I do this differently? Or something that I could find and harp on.
But that's great. I mean, that's what makes a professional at whatever your profession is. That's what you should be doing.
I agree. Yeah. But then I also understand why some breweries can't be in that position.
Hmm.
Like, look, I'm the owner and the brewer. Nobody tells me what I can and can't do.
Right.
You know, as long as it makes like sense in the books.
Sure.
I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And so I think that like, I've worked at other places that you didn't have that freedom. You know, they're like, well, here's the budget. So it's like, do the best that you can. Here's what you got.
That makes sense.
And so, you know, when you have complete freedom, you know, you have the ability to do whatever you want. And a lot of those times that's kind of like the deciding factor of, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's talk about the beer in my glass. I got a Czech style Pils, I think.
Yes.
What's this beer called?
This is Carrying the Sun.
Okay.
So this is a 12 degree Czech Pils. I tried to stay as authentic as possible. So this is all Czech barley. It's all Czech saws.
Okay.
It's a Czech yeast. I can't decoct currently, so I'll knock myself on that one that it isn't traditionally.
But you would if you could?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah. I'm working towards that. You know, I mean, yeah. I have all these ideas in my head of like what I want to do as far as like process and equipment and all this stuff, but we're new. So
yeah.
Opening a business isn't cheap. So I'm just trying to get the train rolling. So then
that's
we can
slow your roll. That's exactly. Fine. Yeah. Exactly. You're like, I can get to this. Yeah.
And so it's like, I wanted to brew this beer. All right, you know, let's just do it. So yeah, if I could, I would add decoction.
Okay.
And open fermentation and horizontal lagering.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But
just all traditional.
Sure. Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, like, that's fun for me is all those challenges. Each one of those things is a new avenue that you're going to learn from. Yeah. You're probably going to mess it up. You're going to learn from it, and then you're going to be a better brewer because of it.
Nice. So in this case, the best you could do is, like you said, all traditional and authentic ingredients, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then probably some very traditional lagering techniques and fermentation techniques. Like what's your fermentation temperature? What's your schedule?
Sure. Yeah. So this is fermented. I think it was basically knocked out at 46.
Okay.
Fermented at 48 with, what is it? Y yeast. Oh God, the numbers. Y yeast 2278, the Czech pills.
Okay.
And I purposely chose that yeast because it's like a lower attenuating yeast.
Ah.
So I wanted a little bit of body left behind because that's kind of like what characterizes a Czech pills in my mind is that you have a little bit of body, you have a little bit of malt character, and you have a nice pop of bitterness to balance both of those.
Is that kind of the difference between like a 10 degree pills and a 12 degree pills?
They're both going to be kind of in the same realm. It's literally just like, you know, the 10 degrees probably going to be like 3.94.
Okay.
Whereas this is 4.4.
I see.
You're still going to have that like residual gravity for that kind of body and malt character. And then you have that nice pop of bitterness to kind of balance the two.
Yeah.
I see them kind of one in the same, and one is just like the, you know, bigger brother, little brother sort of thing.
Well, as with your other beers, it is delicious. It's clear.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly crystal clear.
No.
Right? So you don't filter or fine or...
So for this beer, I did not do any finings or filtering.
Hmm.
I don't even have a filter. I would love to have a filter.
Okay.
That was something that back at Taps, like there's something about a like heavily filtered German lager.
Yeah.
That, like there's this crispness and this clarity and this just like vibrancy that you get from it that I would love to have, but filters are expensive, so
very expensive. would filtering be considered traditional anyway?
For certain styles, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I know. I mean, the Germans are hardcore about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You must remove all the yeast. Yeah.
Okay. So fair enough. They're probably filtering.
Yeah. But the Czechs are a little bit more free.
Okay.
But yeah, I wanted to basically make sure the head retention was going to be like great on this beer.
Okay.
We have the Lucre faucets coming. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be pouring this beer on those.
Nice.
Technically not the side pull because we don't have the space for them, but they have a new version that's a vertical.
Okay.
So it does the same thing.
Got it.
But it is, it's like it's basically like a fancy ball valve.
Yeah. That's like a traditional pour. You've probably had Bierstadt beer out in Colorado there. Yep. And of course they do the slow pour pills that way.
Yeah. And they use the same faucets. There's the side pour, side pull version.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. Really good beer. Well, why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break and come back. We'll learn a little bit more about you and your brewery. And then we got some more beers to try too. So hang in there. You're listening to The Session and we'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We are still speaking with Tenma Beer Project out of Oakland, California, and I'm talking with Brennan Perry, who's the co-owner, along with his wife, I believe.
Yeah. Yes.
And also the head brewer. You can go to Tenma, that's T-E-N-M-A, tenmabeer.com if you want to learn more about them. Where'd you get the name from?
Tenma. So Tenma's a family name.
Okay.
It's actually my middle name. It is my mother's maiden name or last name now, and it was my grandfather's last name.
Where's it from?
It's Japanese.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Got it. So, man, naming a brewery these days.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had always kind of thought that I would want to name it Tenma. I like it because it's five letters. It's easy to remember.
Right.
It's not taken, you know.
Like
that's the biggest one. It's not taken.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of means something to us, but if you don't know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And that's how I felt about it. So I don't want to say I didn't like it when I heard the name. I had no feelings about it. Because I'm an idiot and I don't know what it means. Like I didn't bother to ask, right? Now that I know what it means, I love it. I think it's great to have a family history name like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and I did that somewhat purposefully. Okay. I wanted the brand to kind of be malleable and kind of take it wherever we wanted to. If we wanted to do some like really dark stuff, we could. If we wanted to do some other stuff, lighter stuff, we could. And like having a name that pigeonholes you, like for me, it made me too nervous. Because especially in this day and age, like breweries have to move, like change and pivot and like do all these things. And it's like, I wanted to make sure that we had the freedom to do something like that.
Yeah. And I like when breweries do this. Not all of them do. You chose Beer Project.
Yes.
Instead of brewing company or brewery or why that?
So that was actually Dana's idea.
Okay.
Dana always kind of was pitching the idea of Beer Project.
Because I like it.
I do too. Yeah, obviously we chose it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
but yeah, she kind of always had the idea that it's, you know, we're constantly going to be changing beers. We're constantly going to be working on things. Like she's like, you know, you're not going to be wanting to brew the exact same thing over and over and over again.
Right.
So it's a project. It's never complete. So we're always changing, we're always growing, we're always, you know, just evolving.
Yeah.
And so it's the Beer Project.
I like it. Yeah. The first time I heard someone use that was they're out of Colorado, but it's the Fermentation Project.
Okay.
Is it Crux?
I know there's Crux Ferment.
No, it's not Crux, but that's what the word I had in my head too. I know them well too. It's just I'm drawing a blank. But anyhow, I've liked it since then. And there's a couple other Beer Project breweries out there. I like that Altamont chose something different too. They're Altamont Beer Works.
Right.
I don't have anything against just being brewery either, but I don't know. I just kind of like it. And I think you're right that if you're, especially at your size, if you're going to be constantly experimenting and changing like that, Beer Project works great.
Right. Yeah.
And let's talk about the size of your brewery while we're at it. Did you say 7-barrel brew house?
Yes. Okay. So we have a 7-barrel brew house. We have 7 7-barrel fermenters and a 7-barrel bright.
Okay.
There is room for growth there. But yeah, I mean, we're happy with what we have right now and that's definitely making it work.
Okay. Well, and that's kind of a question I have is like, is that enough volume to make it work? You know, from a number standpoint.
Yes.
Okay.
But it means that my wife and I have to do a lot.
It's just you two that work there now, or?
Yeah, we have technically 2 front of house employees.
Okay.
One of them, they basically are kind of just working like one day a week right now.
Okay.
But yeah, it's primarily right now I'm doing all the production, all of the social media, all of like beer delivering.
Oh, right. You deliver packaging. Our beer too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that is me. Yeah. Which can get funny. It's funny at times because I've had some accounts don't treat their like drivers all that well.
Oh no.
And so it's like, they're like, we'll tell the owner. And it's just kind of like, okay.
You're like, I'll deliver the message.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's, that actually, I think it sucks and would be highly entertaining at the same
right,
time.
Right, right, right. But yeah, so it works because, you know, it's just the two of us. And yeah, Dana's honestly right now, she's not here right now because she's working the tasting room.
Sure. Okay.
So yeah, it is just us. And that's the way we wanted it. You know, when we were looking at buying a business, man, there's a lot of breweries for sale right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
And so there was some stuff that it's like, you know, we had realtors and like all these people being like, well, don't you want this one? It's got like a 30-barrel brew house. And it's like, absolutely not.
Right.
You know, because like the whole idea of the Beer Project is like to experiment and to change. And it's like, dude, 30 barrels is a lot of beer.
Yeah, that is a lot of beer.
Yeah, because I remember when I was at Taps, we had basically a 30 barrel, and we had 60 barrel tanks, and sometimes we brewed 30 barrel batches in the 60s, and like even that, sometimes you're like, dude.
And you need it. I mean, you need a sales team to move that much beer.
You do.
At 7 barrels, you get a few key accounts, me, some others, yeah. And you can, and of course your own tap room.
Right.
You can probably go through 7 barrels pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And so it doesn't sound like you're anti-growth, but you're just brand new and haven't figured, you know, you don't know yet. You'll see how it goes.
We haven't even been open for a year yet. Give me some time.
Yeah. But you wouldn't, you know, in 5 years, everyone just loves your beer. You can't make enough of it. You wouldn't say like, well, no, this is who we are. We're just 7 barrels.
Our eventual goal would be to kind of like where would we cap out? You know, that's kind of like a question, you know, maybe like 2,000 or 3,000 barrels a year.
Okay.
Like, I don't really see... Because you can do a lot with that. So, like, there's, like, Highland Park as a great example of, like, they don't really distro much or at all, maybe. I'm not sure. Either way.
Yeah, we have a hard time getting their beer.
Yeah, it's very little.
Yeah.
And they're about, like, 2,000 or 3,000 barrels a year. And they have, like, a really awesome location in Chinatown. And it's, like, that's the size that felt right to me.
Okay.
Whereas, like, you can control most of how your beer is being served and poured, you know. And you have, like, a... It's small enough where you can still pay attention to everything.
Yeah.
And because I've seen things get too big, and like, no matter what you do, it's just too many moving parts, man.
Yeah. I've thought about like growing this place. Like in the early days, we were like, oh yeah, we should have 10 locations someday. Right. And I guess I wouldn't be against that, but I wouldn't be the person to do it. I wouldn't be the person to run it. Like, to me, 10 locations means, okay, I guess we're hiring a CEO and a CFO and everything else because I'm not doing that shit.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know? But this feels... I know everything that happens around here at the Hop Grenade, and we have 11 employees. So, yeah, I can see how having a handle on your product feels good, too.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and, you know, like, since we're such sticklers for, like, glassware and all these things, it's like... We want to control all of it. Like, yeah. I guess, you know, we're control freaks in some way.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's, you know, that's why we do what we do.
Sure.
You know?
Well, that was your other brewery name if you needed one. Control freaks. Well, let's talk about the beer in our glass.
Sure.
Now, this is, so I'm a pale ale aficionado. I'm not an expert, but definite aficionado. My favorite style always. This you have listed as a New Zealand pale.
Yes.
Now, I've seen that from other breweries, and I've never asked the question. I've always just assumed, well, that means it has New Zealand hops in it. Is that all that is, or is there an actual style of New Zealand pale ale?
I think there is maybe in the, like the, what is it, the World Beer Cup and JBF style guidelines. No, wait, that's New Zealand IPA. Anyways.
Oh, New Zealand IPA, yeah.
Anyways, no, right. I didn't really basically like say, oh, well, it has to go fit to this style. I brewed it pretty much like a pale ale.
Okay.
But I just used a bunch of New Zealand hops.
Which ones did you use?
So this is Nelson, Nectaron, and Ruaka.
Okay.
So this is actually the first beer that we've rebrewed.
Mm.
So we did this beer before. This was a GABF submission for the most recent one, and I was basically like, hey, we have labels for this, like, I loved that beer, let's do it again. And so, like,
it's fantastic.
Thank you. There are some changes to it. Being small, I don't get to select hops, I don't get to choose lots, I don't do that sort of thing.
Okay.
So I get what I get.
Yeah.
And so this one has a different lot of Nelson and a different lot. Actually, I lift a different lot of everything.
Okay.
And
do you notice distinct differences in those lots, you know, yourself?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And especially this Nelson is a different grower. So the other one was NZ Hops. This one is Freestyle.
Okay.
And I also kind of changed it up because I went back as I do. Mm-hmm. I had all my notes and I'm like, what would I change? And so I did some of those things. And like, I think some of them... Like, I like what I did, and I see how it worked before in a different way. So it's, you know, again, it's a beer project. I'm here to continually taste, change, and tweak.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if one of the changes you made is... I took this home the other day, by the way. We had cans of it here, too. So it's kind of been my go-to pale since then. It's super dry.
Yes.
And I love that. I like a Sierra Nevada pale ale too that's not super dry.
Right.
But for the most part, I like when my pale ales are super dry. This is even drier than normal for me. But what I think rounds it out is It's a little bit tannic. It has some tannins in there, I think, from the hops. And that, to me, that alone adds back some body.
Yeah.
Without adding any sweetness at all.
Right.
So that's what I really, I love that it's dry. It's definitely, the aroma's danky, like you would expect from New Zealand hops. Not overboard on the Nelson, like diesel dank. That's not, right. that's super subdued. And I can go either way on that. Sometimes I want it to be in my face. And in this case, I like that it's subdued. And then, of course, it's crazy tropical, you know, just again, because of New Zealand hops. Like that Nectaron, such a great hop, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Nectaron lately. It's in this beer. We have an IPA that we're going to be tasting soon that also has Nectaron. I did a collaboration with Cellar Maker yesterday, and we're using Nectaron in that.
Nice.
I think it's just this really interesting hop that... So, again, I'm kind of like a technical guy. So, YCH acquired or basically like merged with NZ Hops. And so, now we have all the analytics of like hops that YCH has for some of these New Zealand varieties.
Nice.
And so... They did some research, and like there's a what's called a survivables compounds, and so like they'll just see, okay, what sort of compounds are more likely to stay through fermentation and sort of things like that.
Okay.
I mean, so Nectaron was super high on that, and so I said, all right, fuck it, let's just throw it into the whirlpool and see how it does. And it was fantastic. It gave this insane kind of like I almost say like peach skin, nectarine skin, kind of like this like mm-hmm. kind of almost pithy kind of stone fruit thing,
yes.
which I'm a big fan of, which layered along with like the Rewaka and the Nelson kind of just create this like layered experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, big fan of the Nectaron stuff. I think it
so good.
In like a, you know, a modern pale ale or IPA, it
yeah.
really carries that kind of fruity characteristic.
It also, and I think this will give us a good segue into what like modern hoppy beers are to you, kind of what that means to you. But it has a firm bitterness.
Yes.
And that's not always in modern hoppy beers anymore. Like some of the pillowy, flowery, which I also enjoy in certain beers, is overtaken most modern hoppy beers. This has pillowy, flowery, and a firm bitterness, which I like, and I think that adds to the dryness.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, a lot of that is intentional.
Okay, yeah,
you know, I'm playing with different like water profiles and making sure that the minerals are in the right places that I want them to, making sure like the finishing gravity is where I want it, and like layering in a nice pop of like strong bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
probably obviously have a 60-minute addition of bittering.
Yeah.
And is that just normal like T90 hops for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So no, like none of the fancy flowable products or anything like that.
No.
What about mid-range? Are you doing 30 or 20 minute then to get firm bitterness too?
It depends on the style. For pale ale, I don't think it can hold up to all that layering. Okay. I think if you start to just really whack it at like a pale ale size, I think you can just go overboard really quickly.
Okay.
So this is 60 minute and whirlpool. That's pretty much it.
Got it. And what was the 60 minute a New Zealand hop too?
No.
No, just it's whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I say, you know, 100% New Zealand hops, but I don't, yeah. The 60 minute doesn't really count in my mind.
I understand. Yeah.
So this is CTZ. I like the character of CTZ.
Okay.
I've played with some other bittering hops. Like I like Simcoe. That's another great bittering hop.
Yeah.
It's kind of like punchy, but soft still, which works great in like IPAs when you're trying to like really load it up.
Okay.
But CTZ is just like a nice kind of like herbal bitterness.
Plus affordable.
Yes.
Right.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like, what was it, like $9 a pound or $10 a pound or something like that?
Yeah. Which yeah.
This day and age, like, I'm like, hell yeah.
That's old school pricing right there.
Yeah. Well, it's like a lot of people are afraid of CTZ. You know, like people are like, no, it's going to be dank and it's going to be herbal. And it's like, yeah, it is. But
yeah.
Like if you put like a tiny touch of that in,
right.
It adds this layered thing.
Well, and if you're putting so much later anyway, those are going to overpower oh, yeah. anything that happens at 60 minutes.
If I can yeah. find, if there's somebody out there yeah. that can tell me what hop variety somebody uses 60 minutes, like,
yeah.
and get it right every time, I'd be really impressed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So then the all three hops at Whirlpool.
No, right? Just Nectaron.
Oh, just Nectaron.
Yeah, so being small,
yeah.
I would love to be able to layer in whatever's getting dry hopped and like the same in the Whirlpool.
Yeah.
But I hate partial bags.
Okay.
So I just don't.
Got it. So just Nectar on then at flame out, basically Whirlpool, and, yep. and then three hops for dry hop.
Yep.
Got it. How long are you dry hopping for?
My dry hopping is pretty short.
Okay.
So I'll dry hop and then... So there's a method that I basically kind of stole from Green Cheek.
Good place to steal from.
Yeah. yeah. So one of the... that was like a segue. One of the brewers that works there, I used to manage him at Beechwood.
Okay.
And he's like a pretty good friend of mine, Max Visbeek. Yeah. So he's... I kind of ask him questions every once in a while. I mean, I do know Evan as well, but I'm not nearly as close with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, so throw the hops, come back 24 hours later, I'll add like 15 pounds of head pressure, and it'll actually push those hops into suspension.
Okay.
And so you'll get...
As opposed to floating on top?
Is that, yeah, so yeah, okay. I almost kind of want them to float on top. I want them to kind of hydrate, and then I'll basically push them in, and then they'll basically drop through the beer. And it's crazy. Like, so like... I'll dry hop and then I'll come in the next day and I'll take a sample and it smells like it hasn't really even been dry hopped.
Oh, interesting.
I'll put that 15 PSI on the head, like on the head space, and within 15 minutes, like I'll pour a sample and it's green.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot sitting on the top, and I've even like visually checked it. Like I'll pop open, like, you know, as long as there's positive pressure, pop yeah. open, put a flashlight in and be like, yep, that's green.
Okay.
And then I'll do that basically 15 PSI for like an hour. It'll pretty much drop in, and then I'll open it up like in the beginning because I wasn't sure. I was like, is it going to work?
Yeah.
This seems weird. So I would pop it open and look inside and be like, oh, yeah, no, there's nothing there anymore.
Amazing.
And so then pretty much after that, like I'll let it sit for maybe another 24 hours. And as more often than not, I'll basically crash it.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of people probably out there being like, what about hop creep and all this stuff?
Right.
I use a lot of ALDC.
Okay.
And, you know, like I've been fighting with hop creep for many years, and this seems like a pretty consistent way of kind of handling it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some people that are like, you know.
But I thought short contact times are beneficial for avoiding hop creep. Do I have that backwards?
Oh, no, okay. I mean, it is that way. So obviously the longer you sit on hops, it's just going to, you know, like the enzymatic activity is just going to increase, and it's just kind of like a snowball.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, if you can get them in there quick, drop them out. It's seemingly working for me.
Do you feel like you have to put in more pounds per barrel in a short time? No. Okay.
No, I feel like no matter what, if you get your contact, like you're going to get pretty much everything you want out of the hops in 24 hours.
Okay.
Like I've found that rousing and stuff, I'll rouse a little bit, but like, for the most part, I don't really think like you're getting a whole lot. Like I think a lot of the people when they're rousing are pushing in that green matter on the top.
Okay.
So it's like you're not necessarily rousing what's on the bottom. You're basically like trying to get everything pushed in.
Which you're accomplishing with the head pressure.
A different way.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What did you tweak on this beer from the first one? Anything anyone would notice?
Not really. Yeah. It's like nerdy stuff. Like changed. I've been playing with the sulfate and chloride kind of ratios a lot.
Okay.
I have oddly enough been dropping my sulfate, because like that's a big thing. Like you want a big sulfate pop, you want to accentuate that bitterness, but what I've been doing is dropping that and upping my bitterness levels.
Okay.
So it's like overall the body of the beer for the minerals is soft, and so you can throw a bigger charge of bitterness at it because the beer is going to finish soft.
I see.
If you have too much sulfate, it's just like this ripping, bitter, lingering, like intense. And it's just like, it's too much. It's you know, it's spice on spice. It's not, yeah.
Well, maybe that's kind of what I'm picking up, where I said that this is both, you know, can be experienced as soft and pillowy while also having firm bitterness. Which
right.
just sounds counterintuitive.
It seems weird. But yeah, like, I don't know. I was... So when we first took over the facility, I'm used to brewing with SoCal water. That was like most of my career of like, you know, actually brewing world-class beer was SoCal water. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
In order to make great lager in SoCal, you have to have RO.
I see. Okay.
You don't brew a great lager with city water.
Got it.
Maybe a Dortmunder. That would be your exception.
I see. Okay. I've probably tried some of those LA lagers.
Right. Yeah. So RO. But man... We are extremely lucky. Like, Oakland water is insane. It's basically RO on tap.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
So at taps, we would basically like RO, cut out all the minerals. TDS would be, we would shoot for like anywhere like 30 to 60 for like lagers.
Okay.
Coming out of the tap, I'm like 25 sometimes.
Wow.
So it's basically like RO. So learning how to build up the water profile for hoppy beer was definitely a learning curve.
Okay.
I tried to mimic SoCal water pretty much from the get-go, and I was like adding all this stuff I didn't need to add.
I see.
Magnesium, I'm like, oh, I have to have the magnesium and the sodium and all these. No, I think if it's in the water already, it comes off differently.
Okay.
But when you're adding it, it felt dirty.
I see.
And so I had a huge amount of sulfate because the water down there had a bunch of sulfate. So I mimicked that. Didn't really like how the beers were coming out. So I kind of started to pare that back down.
Okay.
But then I noticed our bitterness was kind of like softening up too. It's like, well, what if we just throw more bitterness? And so like I kind of found
by that, you mean just adding
more
60-minute IBUs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
More IBUs.
Yeah.
And so I kind of am working on that balance. I mean, I'll forever be working on that stuff.
Yeah.
But that is something that, that I've found success in lately, I guess.
Yeah. Well, another fantastic beer, and in fact, and we have another pale ale on tap from another brewery, and I like that brewery a lot too. We both tried that, and I had yours first, and then I went to that. I was like, yeah, no, this one's okay. Yours is way better. And
well,
and by that, I mean it's and to someone else, the other one might be better. This is really kind of, like I said, it's just kind of my style. I love how dry it is. Loves it has firm bitterness, and then I think like every other beer nerd on earth right now, I'm just a huge fan of New Zealand hops, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm like super into New Zealand hops.
Yeah.
I'm stoked with all the stuff that they got coming out too. I just got some Superdelic today.
Oh, which, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah. It's another kind of New Zealand variety to me. So we did a collaboration with Original Pattern, I think last week, which was a West Coast Pills. We threw some Superdelic in that, and so I got to rub some of it and smell it.
Nice.
It kind of reminds me of like a New Zealand version of 586.
Okay.
So it's kind of like that really resiny herbal kind of thing, but like nice, dank kind of berry character to it. And yeah, again, that one's super high on like the survivable chart. Some people don't even pay attention to that. I don't know. I guess I'm just a technical guy.
But it seems like pretty relevant, especially if that's not even just you. My customers who know hops by name, they talk about what they're smelling. Like, they're all about hops. So to me, survivable is a pretty important, data.
I agree. But some of it is take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
You know, I'm not just going to be like, oh, well, this one has this thing, so I have to use it there.
Sure.
It's like, no, like the Nelson IPA that was at the bistro, that I used Nelson in the Whirlpool, and like that's technically by the like chart, it's a low survivable, but
okay.
No way. I mean, that thing smelled amazing.
Right. Okay. Got it. Well, why don't we pour the West Coast IPA too?
Sure.
If you want to grab that. And at the same time, I wanted to get your take on, you know, I've mentioned the phrase here, modern hoppy beers. And it came from you, actually, when I do a little pre-interview with folks, so you can know my secrets at home. And you listed that it's, you know, one of the things you just really enjoy brewing. But how would you describe what a modern hoppy beer is? Thank you for that, by the way.
Modern hoppy beer. Yeah. So, I mean, we all kind of, well, I know I did. I was learning about hoppy beer. You know, I turned 21 in 2009. So, you know, as soon as I could buy like all those beers, like anything, I was just on the hop train pretty much immediately. And, you know, IPAs back then, you know, you had these like just rippingly bitter, and like there's like this pine and resin, and like, you had a whole bunch of crystal malt.
Yeah.
And so it's just like this malt bomb. And then in order to counteract that malt bomb, you had to throw all these insane amount of hops at it.
Hello, Racer 5.
Racer 5, Ruination. The original Green Flash West Coast with the purple label.
Okay.
That one, like, I remember having that and just being like, oh my God, this is insane. Or like Palette Wrecker.
Yeah.
Like those things.
Yeah.
You know, and so like, I would say those, I don't know, those were really popular for a while, but it's hard. I mean, you can't session something like that. You have one of those and you're just blasted.
Yeah.
So modern to me is kind of striking a balance.
Okay.
Getting something that's a little bit more lean. Mm-hmm. Like as far as malt bill goes, I mean, all these beers that I have, they're all Pilsner malt base.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like cutting back on the maltiness because, like, you know, people always say, like, well, people used to say, well, you got to have malt to balance the hops.
And oh, it's yeah.
Like, yeah. Not anymore, man. Like, the more that I had these beers that were like slowly trending away from those things, I was like, man, those things are just getting in the way.
Right.
You know, and it's like, even at like 1%, I feel like I can taste crystal malt.
Okay.
And so I just kind of cut it out.
Sure.
And there was some beers at Beechwood, and I remember some of the IPAs that we would do, the specialties. Mm-hmm. So they would, Jules was just like, you know what, let's just do all Pilsner malt, or like a 50-50 blend of two row pills and like cut everything else out.
Yeah.
And I remember those were the beers that just like stood out in my mind of just like, whoa,
right,
this is insane.
Right.
And then, you know, because it's there is technically less malt, you don't need to hit it as hard with hops. So it's this kind of like modernized adaptation from what it was to, you know, sure, where we are now, where in order to find the same sort of balance, you have to pare down the bitterness.
Yeah.
You want it to be on this lean body, but you kind of have to pare down the bitterness.
Okay.
And I think I know I've gone a little far on that. There's certain Pilsner malts that are super light, and I've gone like super light. Let's see how light I can get this. And,
right.
Tim over at Cellar Maker, he likes to call that hop soda.
Okay. Yeah. Hop water, hop yeah, soda.
It's,
yeah.
You know, it's just like this, there's barely anything there. And so he likes a little bit more of like a, you know, a rich, like, you know, you can go too far.
Yeah.
And so like, that's kind of where I want to stay, is that like, I want to be ultra lean, but yeah, not so lean that there's just nothing,
sure,
nothing there, nothing to stand on.
Well, and I wouldn't call them either yours or other modern hobby beers that I like. I wouldn't call them unbalanced either. Right. Like you were saying, oh, it used to be, oh, you have to add malt to balance this. And that was a thing. But it's not like you traded that in for, oh, fuck it, now we just have unbalanced beers.
Right.
Like you said, you were pulling back the BUs,
right,
while you're pulling out the malt.
Right.
However, I find it just interesting, and all the beer nerds know this, you're pulling back IBUs, but you're adding more hops.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's the modern way to do it. We all just went away from those, you know, what was it, 30-minute, 20-minute, 10-minute, mm-hmm, and then maybe a 1-minute addition,
right,
back in the day, like when the Brewing Network started, you know?
So I remember brewing when I would kind of first started at Beechwood at the production facility, and I remember brewing a double IPA, and it was mash hop, first wort, 90-minute, 75-minute, 60-minute, 45-minute,
right,
30-minute,
right,
15, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah.
You know, the beer was fantastic, but it's like, oh man, you know, you have to have such a big thing,
yeah,
for anything to handle all that hop load.
Right.
And so, yeah, when you pare these things down, you're kind of, you know, you have to be a little bit more judicious with your, you
right,
know,
well, and for me, it's actually, you know, I've been doing this going on 19 years. It's been fascinating to watch that shift too.
Yeah.
And I think some of it has to do with hop prices. But I do think we would have ended up with these techniques anyway, because the consumer palate went this way, the brewer palate went this way. And once everyone realized they didn't have to add all those middle hops,
yeah,
I think it was like, okay, cool, that's an awesome byproduct. We're just going to add them all at the end, maybe saving a little cash. Of course, then now you're putting in, what is it, 4 pounds per barrel is pretty common, I think.
I guess, you know, what I will say about that is like, you know, you're trying to shift where balance lies. You know, like a great example for me is like Czech pills and German pills. So like in my mind, they basically have the same amount of balance. Like they're basically, they drink very similarly.
Yeah.
But the Czech pills has a higher finishing gravity, and so it needs more BUs. German pills is finishing super low, so you need less BUs. And so it's like these, where are you shifting? As long as you're like keeping the balance together, you can kind of shift these things wherever you want them.
I see. Okay. Well, let's use this beer as an example. So I've got your West Coast IPA. What's this called?
This is Universal Consciousness.
Okay. It is, it's not super yellow, but it's on the lighter side, right where I like it for my IPAs, by the way. Is this 100% Pilsner malt?
No.
Okay.
This one, I want to say, is 60-40. So 60% pils, 40%. Two row.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I mess around so much, I have a hard time keeping track of all this stuff. But yeah, this one was Something else that I kind of been playing with to find that balance and figure out where I can load these beers full of hops is like finishing gravity. So some of them finish super, super low.
Okay.
And I think that kind of is where you can tip into that like hop soda realm.
Yeah.
Like if it's like in the 1.5 Plato range, it can kind of be almost, there's not enough there to hold up. So this one, I was trying to push it up just a touch.
Are you adding sugar?
No.
None. Okay.
So it's basically just like mash temps.
What's your mash temp?
Oh, God. I don't remember this one. Maybe 151, 152, something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So it just pushed it just enough to finish right around like 2 Play-Doh.
Got it.
And so that allowed me to add more bitterness. So it's kind of like, again, striking that balance. Because I think having something too thin and not bitter, it doesn't necessarily drink like an IPA.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to have that bitterness. You want to have like a bit of a body to it. Because then otherwise it just kind of feels like a big pale ale.
Yeah, I agree with that. And this is maybe a dumb question, but like Carafoam or anything like that for head retention?
Wheat. I'll use wheat a lot.
Some wheat, okay. Yeah. Just like white wheat, normal old?
Yeah. Just malted white wheat.
Yeah, okay. Got it. And what about yeast on your hoppy beers?
001.
So same with the New Zealand Pale Ale?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just want it clean.
Yeah.
Do you ferment those temps low to keep it super clean too?
I do,
Like where at?
I'm not super low, like 65.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. Because this collaboration beer I did just yesterday, I'm not a brewer. I will say this, more brewing information has come in and right back out of the skull than most humans on earth, right? Like, so many interviews, so much good information.
Right.
And it stuck, 65 stuck out in my head, but I didn't have proof of it. And so they were asking me my input on fermentation. I was like, you know what, man? I want the hops to shine. So I think 65. But at the same time, I was like, but if you're not seeing good fermentation tomorrow, you know your yeast better than I do. And I'm sorry I fucked it up.
Right.
But to me, because they were like, really? Like 68? I was like, I think 65.
Yeah. I actually have a double IPA fermenting right now, and I actually have it at 62.
62, okay.
I don't want that boozy thing. I don't really like double IPA to begin with, honestly.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't want, like, the last thing I want is it for it to be hot.
Okay,
so I've started off 62, and I'll ramp it up and get it probably up closer to, like, 68 by the end.
Okay. Yeah, all right. And it's Cal Ale you're using?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like White Labs?
White Labs, 001.
Yeah. So, and that's the other thing, like... Chris's voice is what was sticking out of my head, because he's like, oh, dude, you can almost lager with Cal Ale. Cal Ale will just do its job at almost any temperature.
Pretty much.
But I do think brewers are still fearful. Like, well, what if it doesn't just start taking off? And, you know, so.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's what I thought,
too. I've seen some crazy things in my days. Okay. Like, I've seen at Beachwood, we had a beer, basically. I don't know what happened. I think the temp probe failed or something like that, or jackets got stuck on. It was a double IPA. We came in. It was at 58.
Okay.
And then we honestly just like let it go, and it warmed itself up, and it tasted fine. No,
right.
We could tell.
Yeah.
So like Cal Ale is a workhorse.
Yeah,
which,
absolutely. Yeah,
by the way, I get not all of it, but pretty much all my yeast from either Ghost Town or Original Pattern.
Oh, you do?
So shout out to you guys.
Because you need such a small amount?
Well, yeah. And it's like, they're like, yeah, I'm going to dump like 7 barrels of yeast down the drain. You want, it's like,
hell,
I might
yeah.
as well get, I'm like, maybe pulling like 2.5 gallons, like,
yeah,
you know, they're not even, it's like, it's either going down the drain or you can come get some, you know.
Dude, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
like, because, you know, yeast, like everything, has gotten expensive.
Yes.
And, you know, so Chris White's a friend of mine and a mentor of mine, and it's just one of my favorite people, and I've talked to him extensively about different types of yeast and the cost of yeast too. And he's aware, you know, yeast is expensive for him to produce it. And there's a lot of brewers I talk to, they're like, yeah, no, I'd love to use White Labs, but I don't, you know, I can get it cheaper. And I'm like, yeah, and I can taste it in your beer too.
Yeah.
It's like one of those, so for you, I'm glad you don't have to make that expense. That's
right.
Like really awesome for you, because I do think people should be using the best possible yeast they can get. By the way, White Labs isn't even a sponsor anymore. This is just my honest opinion. Through tasting beer, I mean, all of my favorite beers use White Labs. You know,
I've gone through all my iterations of quote unquote Cal Ale.
Yeah,
I've been at breweries that are like, we don't use White Labs. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, you know, I've gone through like BSI and Y yeast and, you know, even dry yeast, US05. Like, they all kind of have a different character. To me, at least. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, no, I feel I think like
they have to.
I feel like 001 has a different kind of character. And like somebody had said something, there was like, it's a higher glycerol producer, which adds body.
Okay.
Something like that. So you can like load it up with more hops. I don't know. I may be just speaking out of my ass, but
who knows? Chris knows.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he does. I don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like when I was having issues with hoppy beers at other breweries and we were like, this doesn't just taste right. Like something's missing. Every time I would throw 001, it'd be like, there it is. Like, that's what's missing.
That's what it is.
Yeah. So thankfully I have two very great friends.
That's so awesome. What hops are in this IPA?
Mosaic Cryo and Nectaron.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good combo.
Yeah.
Again, firm bitterness, very tropical in my opinion, pithy, like you said, even about the last one, that's carrying through in this beer. Very dry.
Mm-hmm.
But with plenty of backbone for those hops.
Right.
Yeah, this is a delicious IPA.
Thank you.
Also not filtered?
No.
You don't have a filter, but what about fine?
Yeah, yeah. So I'll fine all the hoppy beers. I think that 001 just doesn't drop clear. Like, you got to throw something at it or else you're just going to have yeast and then all your kegs and it's just gross.
Yeah.
So yeah, findings, biofine.
Okay.
Nothing fancy.
It worked. Yeah, this is a great beer.
Yeah, and so we pretty much always have, like, I try to always have two West Coast IPAs on tap, like, almost all the time.
Okay.
And so, like, in order to differentiate those, I actually try and create one that's, like, more bitter, or I'll create one that's more fruity.
Okay.
And this is the one that's more fruity.
More fruity. Yeah, I could see that. I would like to try it. It'd be cool to do a side-by-side with the more bitter. I'm going to come down to the tap room.
Yeah, please
check it out. Do you think do you have more hoppy beers on than lagers at any given time?
No.
Opposite?
Or, yeah.
Oh, is that right?
So right now, I think, so we have 12 taps right now. No, it'd be 14. We have 16 total, but I only have... I think 14 going right now.
Okay.
At one point, I think we had 12 beers on tap and 6 of them were lagers.
I see.
Yeah. So lagers definitely like where my heart lies. As much as I love hoppy beer,
yeah,
like I could spend so much more time brewing lager.
I see.
Yeah, we like right now.
Do they sell as well for you?
Yeah, surprisingly.
Okay.
That is something that's super new for us. So SoCal, oh my God, you couldn't pay somebody to drink a Schwartz beer.
Wow. Okay.
Whereas like here, like we canned some Schwartz beer and it was like, oh my God, like we sold out of this way faster than we thought. Like we thought these, whatever, I don't remember how many we did.
Yeah.
We thought they were going to be around forever. And it was like, well, shit, we should have done more cans. Like,
right.
Damn it. Like, whatever. Yeah, that's the forever. The brewers will, every brewer is like, how much do we do for cans and drought?
Oh, of my course.
God. You never figure it out.
Well, you know who's a good example of that, too, is that you've already mentioned is Original Pattern.
Yeah.
What I love about Andy down there is that, of course, he's putting out IPAs, hazy IPAs, everything he has to. But I think on our shelf right now from him, you're also going to find an amber, a rice lager, a black lager. Like, he goes into all those other styles, and I commend him for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and our customers buy them, too. You know, maybe we're buying one case of that, and we're buying two cases of his hoppy beers, because... that's just how sales go here.
Of course.
But the one case still sells, and people are stoked that those styles are out there again.
Yeah.
Because for a while, they weren't out there at all.
No. Oh, my God. Yeah. When I was first getting into craft beer, I mean, there was that stigma. It was like, no, lager. Ugh. Like,
right.
Macro. And it's like, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I try and keep a bunch of different lagers. I have... Right now, it's like, you know, January, it's slow time. I think I have 5 lagers in my tanks right now.
Okay, nice. And you'll do like a traditional, they got to stay in those tanks for what, 7 weeks?
Yeah, it depends. Okay. It depends on the style. Like for the bigger, higher ABV ones, I want to give it more time.
Even more, okay.
But yeah, like so the schedule is pretty much about like a 6-week turn.
Okay.
It'll be like maybe 7 actually, because it's basically like 2 weeks primary. And then I'll slow crash, which takes about anywhere from like 6 or 7 days, something like that.
Okay.
And then I'll hold it for like 3 or 4 weeks.
I see.
So yeah,
okay.
six, 7-ish kind of is where I find the sweet spot is. I've also held stuff just for how long can I hold this for?
Right.
Where's diminishing returns? And yeah, it's kind of right around there.
Yeah, okay.
Any longer for like lighter beers and you're not really seeing a whole lot.
Okay. And I don't think I've noticed a hazy IPA from you.
We do.
Yeah. Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got it. So you're not against that in any
no,
way? Okay.
No, no, no.
You brought all clear tonight and everything I've taken home myself from here. Although it could have been just because I focus on what's clear. yeah, that's what I've taken home. So.
Yeah, no. I mean, I do it because, look, I mean, it's 2024. Like saying like, oh, hazy.
Oh, yeah,
it's
for
like,
sure.
Come on, man. Like.
So in fact, we're so on the same page, Brennan, that for years, for SF Beer Week, we've done a hazy versus clear event.
Oh yeah,
where we have people blind taste. We don't tell them the brewery. We give them like a. Unfortunately, it's like a paper cup because it's all we can find.
Yeah.
So that you know, if you really looked down in there, you'd figure it out. Yeah. But anyway, we wanted them to choose, and we've had a lot of fun with it. This year, I was like. We have to stop having this conversation.
Right.
So we just switched it to our East Coast versus West Coast.
Okay.
And we're getting East Coast breweries and West Coast breweries. And my hope, actually, is that we get an East Coast clear IPA wins. It's still going to be blind in the sense that you won't know who the brewery is.
Fair.
But now we can give it to you in a proper glass because we don't care about hazy versus clear. We're just doing an East Coast versus West Coast.
That's
because,
nice.
I really felt like, I mean, it's still interesting occasionally to have the hazy versus clear conversation, but I'm over it and I think so are others.
Yeah.
And I also think it's time to stop bashing it a little bit because I don't want to insult my customers. So all the brewers I know, they don't want to drink hazy beer, and neither do I. But who cares? My customers do.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to feel weird or bad because we're around bashing hazy beer.
No.
I want them to feel respected about their decision to like hazy beer.
Right.
So that's why I'm kind of over it too, you know?
I agree. And I think a lot of it too is like, well, so we talk about modern IPA, right? And I feel like a lot of where the modern West Coast IPA pulled or like came to be is because of hazy IPA. People are knocking down bitterness. They're just dry hopping the shit out of it. And I feel like that's kind of what led West Coast IPA to be kind of where it is.
Yep.
And so I think that like to say, you know, you love modern West Coast IPA and you hate hazy IPA. It's like, well,
yeah, no, you don't. I think that's an excellent perspective and an excellent point. And some brewers have taken that to extreme where they're like, I can make that. I'll just make it clear. It's going to taste the same. Happy Hops is an example of that from Russian River. He's told me, we brewed that beer to prove you can have a juicy beer and it can be clear, right? But at the same time, I think you're right. To do that, you still took cues of why people love the hazy beer.
Right.
And then I get the argument, well, then why not just keep it clear? But anyhow, I think you're right. There was a lot to be learned and a lot to be learned about the consumer palate because I think you turned a lot of non-hoppy beer drinkers into hoppy beer drinkers by perfecting hazy beer.
Yeah. Oh, dude, the amount of people that I knew that were like, I hate IPAs.
Totally.
They're like, oh, I'll never drink that. And then they're like, oh, have you heard of like hazy IPA? And it's like, yes, I have. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So you'll brew them. It's just, nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, like they don't sell, like we sell way more West Coast than we do hazy.
Us two here now.
Yeah.
So.
And we still have a lot of people that will just come in and crush them. And it's like, great. Like, I'm happy to have something for you.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I am a purist in a lot of ways of like, oh, you know, like my Czech lager, like I have to do it this way.
Right.
But like, you know, at the end of the day, you still have to keep your people happy.
Sure.
You know, and if brewing a hazy IPA and brewing a pastry stout is that, then I'll do it. And I'll do it my way. You know, I want it to taste good to me.
Yeah.
You know, understanding that what those styles are. I think that's where you can kind of get weird in a weird place is if you're like, I'm gonna make this style, but I want it to taste not like that style. And it's like, well, okay, that's you, but now your customer is confused, and that doesn't make any sense.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about confusing customers, and we're gonna talk about confusing taproom owners too, because this is what happens with. Because you're right, I'm gonna brew this style, but it's not gonna be like that style. They don't fucking call it that style.
Yeah,
you're listening to The Session. We'll be right back.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Their website features real-time inventory, which means if you can put it in your cart, they can guarantee it'll ship the same day by 4 p.m. on weekdays. Want easy and simple electric brewing? Check out the new Series 2 Mash and Boil, featuring an elevated grain basket so you don't have to calculate sparge water. Williams also features the full Kegland line, everything from Brewzilla to Maltzilla, and a huge selection of duo-tight fittings. Looking for a kegerator? Look no further than the Kegland Series X and Plus kegerators, which feature 4 and 8 keg capacity in a compact footprint, and free shipping to the lower 48. Interested in distilling? Look up their proven Williams American Bourbon and Brandy kits, as well as complete distilling equipment packages and conversion kits for popular systems like the Mash and Boil, Anvil, and the Grainfather. Check them out today. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you for hanging out with us. We are still speaking with Brennan Perry from Tenma Beer Project. He's the co-owner and head brewer over there. You can go to tenmabeer.com and check it out. And we're going to talk about one of our mutual pet peeves here about the industry in a minute. We're also going to talk about the incredible Doppelbock that's in my glass. I just crushed that IPA. I don't often finish all the beers in here, not because they're not good, but we got to get through so many, right? I couldn't stop drinking that IPA. So I assumed that was going to be the pinnacle of our night until I just tasted this Doppelbock, which is just amazing. So we're going to talk about that in a second. First up, hey, a couple of sponsors I want to remind you of. My good friend and great brewery over at the 21st Amendment, Sean O'Sullivan's Brewery, Sean and Nico, great people. Their Fireside Chat Winter Ale is still out on the stores. Grab it on the shelf. It's at my local. I know that. I've brought home a six-pack myself recently. It's a winter ale with spices and cocoa nibs. It's one of their specialties. They do great at that beer. So go check it out. The 21st Amendment Fireside Chat. You can go to 21st-amendment.com if you want to look up their availability. You can check it all out over there. And if you see Sean out there, tell him I said hi. Okay. So let's get this beer talked about.
Sure.
Because it's just that first sip was so like bold and rich, and like this is a really incredible complex Doppelbock to me. And I thought like, okay, well now that aftertaste is never going to go away. It totally went away. I'm like ready for 4 more sips already.
Yeah.
Tell me about this beer.
So this is honestly it's a pretty simple beer. I know it says it's a complex beer, but it's I want to say a 50-50 split of Barkapils and Barka Munich. Weyermann.
Weyermann, yeah. Okay.
Weyermann Barkapils and Weyermann Barka Munich. And then I think there's a touch of like Carafa 3 or something, for just because I wanted it to that dark color.
Yeah.
But that really doesn't add a whole lot of flavor. Just maybe a touch of that kind of like, I don't know, chocolatey roastiness in the back. But it's basically just like a 2-malt beer.
Okay. The color is perfection.
Thank you, in my
opinion.
Boiled, oh God, I think I did like a 4-hour boil on this.
No kidding.
Because I just wanted that like big melanoidin, big Maillard like character.
So is this another one that you would have decocted then if you could? Okay, yeah. So that's sort of in lieu of that.
Exactly. That's kind of what I did. Yeah, so the first beer that we tried, I boiled again, I think, for like 2 hours.
Wow.
Because I want that character. And I have a direct fire kettle, so I am getting some pretty heavy like boiling, and I left that burner rip the whole time.
Wow.
So
I think that's where I'm getting a bunch of that complexity then.
Yeah, it's just this kind of layering thing. I think I actually did a step mash on this too.
Wow, so good.
I don't have a way of heating my mash, but I'll basically add like boiling water.
Okay.
Slowly, and make sure that it gets all mixed in. But yeah, I'll basically like do like a low beta rest and like a high alpha.
Okay. And then, are you losing a ton of beer in a 4-hour boil?
No, I planned for it.
You do? Okay.
So even though I boil down, I'm still watering back. You're still creating the melanoidins, even if you water back, you know.
So like, it's just pretty concentrated.
Yeah. It was concentrated, and then I just watered up to hit my gravity.
Okay.
And then just sent to the fermenter.
Fermented. Easy enough.
3470, 48 degrees. Let it ride.
Okay. Does the variety of hops even matter in this beer?
I did use Pearl or Perla, however you want to say that.
Yeah.
It was like kind of a higher alpha German hop. It was like 9 alpha or something like that.
Okay.
I didn't really want that much hop flavor in it. I think this was just like a 90-minute and a 30-minute edition. That's it. I just, yeah. Yeah. That's how I like to brew lager anyways, I think. Like, for all my, like, pills and stuff like that. No Whirlpool hops. Like, as basically at the start of boil, 60-minute, 30-minute, 15-minute if it's a pills.
Okay.
But I want those, like, low-alpha hops boiled forever.
Got it.
I think that creates that kind of hop character. When you I don't know, there's something that happens when you boil these hops that just like create this layer and just like this like staying power.
Okay. Yeah, this beer is amazing. This is one of those styles where I think we were talking about this off air about another brewer friend of ours. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of beer styles out there that I might not order.
Right.
But if somebody brews a world-class version of it, the difference is so incredible that right. You're like, yep, I'm going to go ahead and have another one of those.
Right.
You know, I think we were mentioning like maybe a brown ale. You and I wouldn't like select that first. But if Wild Fields gives us a brown ale, we're like, yep, that's amazing. I'll have two.
Exactly.
And this Doppelbach, I think, is a version of that. It's a style. I enjoy a Doppelbach. I might have a Doppelbach once every 2 years, right?
Yeah,
and right. That's probably when I'm in Germany.
Sure.
But this is a beer that changes my mind. This makes me want to order Doppelbachs.
Well,
like,
thank you.
Like I think that's the difference when someone really nails a style. Like, this is really true to style, right?
I mean, yeah.
Would you say there's anything really different about this than?
I'm not doing it. I mean, it's all German malt, all German hops, German 3470.
Yeah,
I don't really know what else to.
Yeah, no. It's just such a great, like, tiny, I don't even think roast is the right word, but it's that tiny roast, tiny little bit of chocolate, and it's all in the back. The front has kind of a plummy, great, like, malt character. That's what I was afraid was going to stick around too long,
right.
But then it doesn't.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it finished, I mean, low for a Doppelbach. It finished at, like, 4.5 Play-Doh. Mm. But there's enough bitterness and kind of like roasty malt kind of thing going on that just balances everything out.
Yeah.
I kind of was going more for that like creme brulee, like burnt sugar kind of thing that wasn't super like cloying.
Yeah. Do you use like candy sugar or anything?
No,
no, it's just the malt, right? Just and malt. Then those melanoids.
Yeah, that's it.
Ugh, it's so good. That's a fantastic beer. And what's it called?
Monochromator.
Okay.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I think that every Doppelbach should have an Ader at the end.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Like with the celebrator and the
yeah. I love it. Okay. Well, you nailed it with this beer. Like I said, I thought the universal consciousness was going to be the pinnacle of our interview, but no. All right. We don't have a lot of time left, but I wanted to talk about kind of a mutual annoyance of yours and I's.
Right.
And that is, you described it as, or maybe I honed in on this, like misleading beer labels or beer names or beer styles, but like where brewers kind of, there's two ways that it happens in my opinion. We can be misled, like you said just before the break, like by saying, oh, I'm going to brew this style of beer, but it's not going to be anything like that style.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, because it says brown ale, but it's not a brown ale. What am I ordering then?
Then why does it say brown ale?
And the second way to do that is just to not clearly state what the beer is anyway, like regardless of the style. And this usually happens with IPAs.
Yeah.
Just put on the fucking label that it's hazy or not.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, and I can hear an argument in the back of my head that some brewer might say, like, well, it's still an IPA. I just put IPA on there. Here's the problem. I have to sell that beer to my customers. And because we're a cool establishment, my customers care what we think about the beer. So they ask for our recommendations. And I go over to our can fridge for them and they're like, is this, they're holding a beer in their hand, a can. And they're like, is this beer hazy? And it doesn't say anywhere on it. And I'm like, your guess is as good as mine. And it pisses me off, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, just tell me what it is.
Right. Why? I guess, like, what are you hiding?
What are you hiding?
For me, it's one of those, like, look, it's just, I want to make sure my customers are happy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want them to be as informed as they possibly can so that they can make the right decision.
Right.
Well, you know, sometimes that's to a fault. And some people are like, there's so many words. What the hell does all this mean?
Yeah,
you know,
that's, like, all right, it can fine, happen. All right, yeah.
Fine. But at the end of the day, I want them to know what they're going to get for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you don't know everything, but I want them to pretty much know what they're going to get. And then, you know, if they don't like it, that's fine. But right. they can't blame me for being like, well, you didn't say it was this or that. And like, I just feel like it's misleading.
Yeah. And there's no reason for it. And the word misleading is what's happening, but I don't think that brewers are trying to mislead their customers, but I just want them to know you are doing it inadvertently anyway.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want to know exactly what the beer is.
Right.
By the way, I think it more has to do with what company the beer is from and not what's in it, but there are ABC laws about a customer needing to know what they're ordering. I do think it has more to do with the brewery. So like places like mine that don't have decorative tap handles from every brewery.
Oh, right.
We go by number. The ABC initially rejected that. They said customers have to know what they're ordering. They have to know that the beer you've given them is the beer that they ordered. And like I said, I think that more has to do with like what brewery it came from than like what style. And the way we got away with it is like, oh, well, the number on the menu coincides with the number on our tap.
Right.
And they said, okay, that's fine. As long as there's some way to tell number one is a number one. And so there are some legalities around, like, tell us what I'm ordering.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, but I do think, and you were kind of saying before the break, it's okay for brewers to mess with styles, right?
You have to.
Experiment.
That's
but just be careful what you tell me it is.
Right, well, and if you're gonna do something weird, just tell me.
Yeah.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I like innovation. Like, that the whole point of craft beer is to constantly push the boundaries and make, you know, pushing things in different directions, and that's what we do. That's why it's fun. That's why people like, you know, drinking craft beer.
Yeah.
But I think that like leaving that out is, you know, like why would you go through all the effort of pushing a style and making it experimental and then not telling anybody? It feels like, you know, like you went all through all that effort, man. Just you know, own up to it. Just be accept it. You know.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I guess a lot of this comes from my. I do a lot of research and like whatnot for a lot of these like classic styles.
Yeah.
The information's free. It's out there.
Right.
Like listen to some podcasts, read some articles, you know, you don't have to pay for some of this stuff. Like you just, it's out there, do your research and like do the best that you can to try and recreate that. And like, that's what I do. That's what I put a lot of energy and time into.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's just why, you know, why I care about it so much.
Well, and it makes it, and like I said, I glommed right onto this because as a retailer, I think it's a real issue too. Like, well, here's another example. Let's say that you brewed this Doppelbock just like this, but at the last minute you were like, you know what? I want to add a shitload of cocoa nibs to it.
Right.
I want to see what a Doppelbock is like with cocoa nibs. I'm pretty confident that your can would then say Doppelbock with cocoa nibs.
Right.
And like, so that's that I don't get home and go like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, like, and that's again, it's like that customer's perception. Like, I'm not saying don't make a Doppelbock with cocoa nibs.
Yeah.
Do whatever the hell you want.
Right,
but if you
right.
say it, then like now that person's going to know.
Right.
You know, and it's like you run a risk of like, say if you did that and didn't tell them, then you run a risk of them not liking it and not liking you.
Exactly. And so here's the good news. I do think it's more rare recently.
Yes.
Certainly with like labeling hazy. I've noticed many more of our cans are now pretty clearly labeled. So that's the good news. So maybe this little rant of mine is more for just the handful of you out there who think it's part of your creativity to call a beer one thing, but make it something else. And I don't want to stifle your creativity. I just want you to list the something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying
right.
too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fun too. I think it's how you engage your audience, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I did a pre-prohibition pills and it's like I brewed it with corn and cluster hops and all these things. And it's like, you know, it doesn't change the way the beer drinks. It doesn't matter, you know, but it's fun for me to tell the people about it. It's like, hey, I did this research. I did all these things. I'm stoked on what I did and I want to tell you too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I think that that's like a selling point in some ways.
Totally. And I, like you said, it just could hurt your brewery in the other sense too, especially like maybe you're not a very educated beer drinker and you order something that has some strange ingredient. You don't even know what it is. Maybe it was allspice, right? But you're like, right. I'm never drinking a brown ale again.
Yeah.
Because this brown ale had allspice in it and no one told me.
Right.
And they're just
like,
and
that's like, sad because yeah, like yeah, maybe they really like brown ale.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, don't hurt. Look, the industry's having a tough enough time as it is.
Right.
You know, which by the way, can I just say that we're running out of time, but like, don't you think it's kind of a ballsy move to open a brewery at all right now?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to get that out on the
yeah,
table.
Yeah. No, you know, my wife and I have been pen to paper for, probably, I think it was like end of 2019. We had been talking about it for years.
Okay.
But I think pen to paper was end of 2019.
Okay.
And we were like, yeah, we're going to do it. And we're going to do it big. And like, you know, we were thinking about going to get investors and building it from the ground up and doing like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And obviously in March, changed our minds a little bit.
Right.
So yeah, it's insane. But I've been saying I wanted to open a brewery since probably 2011 when I was homebrewing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if I don't do it now, when?
Right.
And like, we were at everything kind of just fell into place. You know, we found this place in Oakland and I have family up here and it was like, we could probably have a free place to stay. And like, it just kind of all came together where it was like, I think we're going to regret this if we don't try.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm glad you did. I do think you lucked out finding that location.
Yes.
But I do also think that your model is the right model for right now.
Yeah.
That hyper local, small, like you're not a nano, so you're not so small that you can't make any money at all. But you're not so big that you can't, like I even mentioned before, just get a few solid accounts and you're good to go for a while. And I think that despite craft beer not being the darling that it once was, there's still plenty enough who need, want, and love a local brewery.
Of course.
And then on top of that, if everything you're putting out is great like it is, you're really stacking the deck in your favor. Because there's others that I would say all that stuff about. I'd say all the same things. Small, local, blah, blah, blah. But if it's not stellar and I don't want to tell my friends about it, don't bother.
Yeah.
Like that's part of craft beer's marketing is, hey, dude, have you had Tenma's beer yet? Like I've had that conversation in this tap room over the last couple weeks. People ask, hey, what's a good new brewery? And if your beer's remarkable, you're going to get mentioned. And like you have to be part of the conversation. So I'm just saying, I do think you lucked out with your spot. But despite headwinds, I think your model and your beer works.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That really means a lot. You know, put a lot of time and energy into this.
Sure.
It's great to hear that people enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. Well, that is about all the time we have right now. I do want to remind you, go to beersmith.com and get your free trial of the best brewing software out there. Beersmith 3 is the version that Brad's on. Brad's been a friend and a sponsor for a long time, and he just makes a great product. And in fact, I think the brewery I brewed at yesterday uses Beersmith. Home brewers use it. Pro brewers use it. Go to beersmith.com and check it all out because it's great stuff. Do you have anything coming up at the brewery you want to make sure we tell anybody about?
So
your anniversary's coming up.
Yeah, our anniversary is going to come up towards the end of April.
Okay.
I want to say it actually lands on, well, we're doing it this year, for the first year, it on 420.
You're doing it on 420. Nice.
Yeah, so.
I know, you're going to throw a party. What are you doing?
Yeah, we'll probably probably have some beer releases. I think the idea this year is that like I'm not really the type of person to brew like all these crazy styles and be like, what bigger beer can we brew this year? No, yeah. I'm gonna brew something, probably two beers that I know are gonna sell well.
Okay.
And then probably do some sort of like merch tie-in with it too.
Okay,
kinda
nice.
Like a one-off shirt or something like that. And
yeah,
kind of have it, you know, just be like a here's your package deal. And then yeah, we'll probably have like a food truck out and stuff like that. So
nice.
We haven't ironed out all the details yet, but yeah, it's looking like it will be on the 420.
Okay. And are you guys open every day at the tap room or?
Right now we are open Wednesday to Sunday.
Wednesday to Sunday. I'm asking for myself here, not just my listeners. I haven't been to the tap room yet. Yeah. And now that I know I could have 16-ish of your beers,
right now,
I'm going to come down.
It goes between like 12 and 14.
12 and 14. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I want to come down and check it out. And I always wanted to see the building, honestly, when it was novel. I only knew of them because I drove by one day. Oh, and I thought that the storefront looked really cool. Yeah. And I liked the name and their branding. And then I never went back. So I'm going to come check it out as soon as I can.
Yeah, well, please do. Dana will definitely be there.
Okay, excellent. And you're either in the back or delivering beer, probably.
Yeah. Most of the time I'm there.
You're okay. Excellent. Well, go check them out. And, of course, go to, where is it? TenmaBeer.com. That's T-E-N-M-A, TenmaBeer.com. You can learn all about it, find out the location. And, you know, I can't promise you that it's always going to be at the Hop Grenade, but it's very, very often going to be at the Hop Grenade. We love your beer. So come on out here if you want to try some Tenma. It's on tap right now, and I believe we have some cans here, too. So, yeah, keep getting us that beer. We'll keep buying it, man. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, Spring Brews Festival is Saturday, March 30th. You can get your tickets right now on thebrewingnetwork.com. Tenma will be there, as will 59 other breweries. It's going to be a great day, as always, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, folks, take care of yourselves and your beer.
The Session is a production of The Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.